Hello and welcome to the first Albion Roar of 2017 here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and support for this show, as ever, comes in the form of oldfootballshirts.com. Well, since we last spoke, we've moved to the top of the table. 2 points and a game in hand over Newcastle. Sounds good, doesn't it? But we got there with a less than convincing victory over Fulham, and it took a two-minute, two-goal blast and a David Stockdale penalty save. Also this week, Elvis has left the building and has gone to live with our friend Werner in Deventer, home to the go-ahead Eagles. And we say goodbye and good luck to Jake Forster-Caskey, who has signed for Charlton on a two-and-a-half-year deal. And we also say goodbye to Jack Harper, who has returned to Spain with Malaga. Congratulations go to the boss, Chris Hughton, who has taken the December Manager of the Month award. And we have an FA Cup game tomorrow against they who cannot be named.
What, MK Dons?
That was the voice of Alan Wares. And we are delighted to welcome back our foreign correspondent. Yeah, I got to that bit eventually. And welcome back to Matthew Wilkin. How are you doing, Matt?
Good. Happy New Year, guys.
And to you too, and mate. We got there in the end. Yes. I'm not going to tell anyone here because people at Radio Reverb will be most upset of us when they hear this, but that was about our fourth take.
Warm in here.
It was actually no much more of a tongue twister than Phil's shirt of the weeks that he always produces for you. But well done for getting through it.
Yeah, I've got one of those to look forward to very, very shortly.
It's the post-Christmas New Year slumber that we finally actually tripped the light fantastic into Radio Reverb airwaves. So, absolutely. Yes, Happy New Year to everyone. So, Matt, how are you, mate?
I'm very good, mate. I'm very good, yeah.
Where you been? We haven't seen you for a while.
Yeah, I think last time I was on the show, I was working in Kenya. Finished there in July and moved to Madrid in August. Still showing off, but there you go. So a little bit closer to home, just back for Christmas, returning to Madrid on Sunday.
Right, you are. So as a new resident, a new Madrileños, got there. God, we're all
Madrista. Madristas.
Yeah. Okay. Have you visited the stadium that's named after two Albion players?
I have indeed. Yeah, I have indeed.
I believe you were season ticket holder.
I'm a membership rather than season ticket.
So how does that work over there?
Well, it's not a bad deal, actually. You pay about €50. You get one free ticket for a game of your choice, excluding Barcelona and Real Madrid. And then you get a pretty cheap ticket. So it's pretty much about €20 a game.
About £15.
Yeah.
And they're no slouches either. They are the top three, aren't they?
Fantastic to watch, yeah. I mean, I am actually closer to Real Madrid, but I just can't like that team.
Is it a bit like sort of a Manchester thing of, you know, people in Guildford supporting Real Madrid and the locals support Atletico?
That is exactly what it's like. And, you know, your proper Madrid people do go and watch Atletico.
Madrileños.
Yep. Yes. Real Madrid is a fantastic experience. Yeah, it's a fantastic experience, but it's people like me. It's tourists who've gone to watch a game, and you know, you get your lots of Chinese and American fans there, and it just doesn't have that kind of community feel. But Atletico, that's the team to watch.
Okay, well, we'll come back and talk to you about that a little bit later on. But first, we've got to talk about us being tourists. And we had...
heading up to the smoke.
We had it was not New Year's Day, was it? It was the second. But we all went up to Fulham.
Out. No. I just sat there and actually pooed myself on listening to the radio. Because when you're listening in on the radio, and Nick Hornby will always tell you this, as much as the presenter, the commentator, can paint the pictures for you and tell you what's happening, you still have a sense of fear and terror. You have no idea whether the back four are in place. You have no idea whether so-and-so is being closed down or properly. They can only explain so much. You can see the game and act accordingly. I just have to sit there and weep.
Okay, well, before we go into too much into the Fulham game, Matt, what we're going to talk about, you've been to pretty much every game over the Christmas period, haven't you?
Yeah.
How have you found the experience since coming back? Because obviously,
we're doing well.
How have you found watching? Because I mean, let's be honest here. Like, we've not been very good for a few weeks.
No, it's a strange one, as you say, because we're not at the top of our game and we're not performing particularly well, but we're getting the results. It actually reminds me. You remember under Gus, we won sort of 8 games in a row during the March period and didn't actually play well in any of them. It reminds me of that, but we seem to find loads of different ways to get the points, you know. We can turn it on, we can dig out results, we can come from behind, but there's so many different ways that we manage to get our points. You know, it's looking good. If this is us at our worst, then, you know.
Well, I mean, everyone says we're going to have a wobble at some point, but
I think we are having our wobble. We just keep winning, wobble. Yeah.
It could quite, absolutely.
So it's most enjoyable. But like I say, I mean, over the Christmas period, well, we only had two games because the Cardiff one got postponed because someone nicked the stadium. You couldn't see it anyway. Was QPR, and QPR were there for the bagging, to be honest. I mean, we got three. If we'd really put our foot down, I'd put our foot on the jugular, we could have really got four, five, six maybe. But, you know, we come away from that kind of comfortable but not really purring because, you know, it's not as though we've taken them up. When we played them earlier in the year, we beat them 4-0. When we played Fulham 5-0, admittedly a little more unexpected. Now, because I think there's a level of expectation, I wouldn't mind betting. When you watch back all the highlights that you get to see, we'll probably realise that actually we're playing, you know, not as badly as we make out. I think it's just there's a level of expectation and there's a level that we're playing at. And I suspect that even Chris Hughton feels this a little bit. You know, we are expected to do well. Therefore, we will actually polish teams off after 70 minutes. And because we don't necessarily, or even then, when we got five past Norwich, we're still then, you know, concerned, think, oh, we want a clean sheet. And you've got to do what you get to get a clean sheet. And here we are being shot at all the time
but
anyway.
There seems to be quite, I don't know if you agree, Al, but there often seems to be in games where you think we could turn it up a little bit.
Mm.
We can go into the next gear. And we sort of didn't, I know you're going to come onto the Fulham game, we didn't actually kick on until we needed to. And as soon as we started to turn the screw, there was only one team going to win it. You know, it was like we could go into another gear when we needed to.
Okay, well, let's talk about the Fulham game as it was then. The only change was Skalak, who came in for March. Which was a bit of a surprise, actually, because Solly was great in the last outing.
Well, he was, but he's not... I mean, don't forget, he's still coming back from injury. So to actually sort of blood him for all these games. We got 70 minutes out of him against QPR, and he did very, very well.
He was shattered by the end of that, wasn't he?
I think he did look a bit ropey. But no, the fact that, you know, we can't go on to it, and, well, certainly the way that it was being described on the radio, and I'm sure that you guys probably saw it, that Skalak didn't exactly have his best game.
No, he was very poor. I mean, a lot of players were not on top of their game.
Tell us, where was it going? I mean, did it follow the pattern of the Fulham game down here, where they actually just bossed the first half? Yeah. We couldn't get a touch.
I think you have to give a lot of credit to Fulham because they were obviously told to push up on us as high as possible. They did not let us play because normally we pass it around the back, you know, dunk to Duffy. There was at least two or three times either Bong or Bruno just skewed it straight out of play.
Exactly. Neither of the fullbacks had a particularly good game.
But I do think that was because they were pushing up on them. They were putting so much pressure on our fullbacks that they were causing them to make mistakes. I actually think Fulham are one of the best teams that I've seen this season, both, you know, home and away.
And as far as the results are going, probably underperforming. You know, they should be up around third, fourth, you know, all the time. You know, it's not just, you know, when Matt's talking about they haven't got the ball and they're pressuring us. Mm. When they do have the ball, they look at a neat and tidy outfit. You know, they've got some players who all seem to know what they're doing, but somewhere down the line, it's not happening for them. I think they, as I understand it from Fulham, certain Fulham fans, they've got a defence that actually still needs tightening up. We saw that last season, certainly. When we played him right way back in August and Tom Ahmed sort of like did his war cry at the end of the game. But when they're going forward, and we saw that at the Amex a few weeks ago, I think that looked very, very decent.
Yeah. Is it Aluko? Very, very good player. Aluko, yeah. Very good
player. Well, he was a player that certainly tested Stockdale in the game. But I mean, there was a couple of instances. I mean, I'll give you the first one here where Bruno did actually manage to play a pass to one of our own players, which was he deserves all our plaudits because he very rarely has an off game, particularly in the last two seasons. He's been absolutely
brilliant, and he
certainly wasn't as bad as Bong in this game. No. But Bong was absolutely brilliant in the game before that, so it was swings and roundabouts. But Bruno played a defence splitting ball through to Knockart, who could not find the unmarked Murray in the box. Now this was a move that repeated itself a couple of times in the game.
Murray was fuming because he was completely in the clear, and Knockart tried a kind of worldy pass rather than just simply put it across to him, but Murray was not happy because we weren't creating anything in that first half. That was probably our only opportunity to break through them, so you can understand Murray's frustration. Yeah.
When the team itself, and it is a team that is actually very self-aware, when it realises it's not playing well, when those chances come and they're a little bit few and far between, you've actually got to make them count. Even if Murray then completely cocked it up, then, you know, he can scream it himself. Fine, he can do that. But when you've got something which is you know, 6,000 Brighton fans can see the obvious pass. Yeah. Murray wants the obvious pass, and it doesn't come. There is a level of frustration.
6,000 Albion fans can see the pass from 100 yards away. So Fulham was starting to get hold of the game, and their player Kearney was fantastic.
Another very, very good player. It's a strange one, as Al says, why they are not higher in the league, because...
But they have got a manager who's got a very average team out of this division, though, so...
Yes, true, yeah.
He's also got this season, he's beaten two teams 5-0, the two teams in third place 5-0. And that's no error. That's no fluke. You don't do that sort of, you know, by being, you know, lucky. There's a reason. And they've pushed us in both games, home and away. They've pushed us.
Well, yeah. Sorry, Matt. You were saying?
No, I was just thinking. Did they also beat Newcastle as well?
Not sure.
I know that Reading was 5-0, wasn't it?
Reading and Huddersfield were 5-0.
That's right. They've turned over some very good teams. Yes,
absolutely.
But, Bruno handles under no pressure and concedes a pen. It was accidental, but it was an easy decision for the ref.
I don't think you can argue with it. There was a couple of fans
beside me arguing. He tried to. I got a booking for it.
I think that was more embarrassment because it was so obvious. The ref could not give it. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like a underarm volleyball serve. Do you know what I mean? He punched
it was right in front of me as well.
It was a keepy uppy that went wrong.
It was, yeah.
He just miscontrolled it, and it was like
shades of dunk at Liverpool, but he didn't handle it. He just let it go in.
David Stockdale, and he saved from Johansson's spot kick. Now we've got to talk about Chris Martin because he's been a thorn in our side constantly. Whoever he's played for, I didn't actually realise.
And his band are unlistenable.
I didn't actually realise this, but he actually was playing for Luton in that JPT semi-final.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, he didn't stand out.
And scored in that game as well. Right. But hey-ho.
Yeah, but you see our team that played that day and you think, well, yeah, you can understand why.
But he's obviously, it looks like he's thrown his toys out the pram a little bit. And,
what's all that about? Do we know?
Well, Steve McLaren's basically said he wants him back at Derby.
Right. But
he can't get him because he's on a season-long on loan. So
There's no recall on those
there's
things.
There's no recall. So basically, it's got to be by mutual consent between Fulham and the player to go back to Derby. Now, Martin obviously wants to go back, but Fulham don't want to let him go.
Well, so it's quite petty on his part then, isn't it? I mean, he signed up for a year. I mean, you have to then wonder why he went on a year-long loan in the first place if Derby were actually going to be interested in him in the first place.
It was a different manager, though. So, for some reason, what was it? Nigel Pearson didn't fancy him. So.
Well, it's just one of those things. I mean, can you imagine? Well, not that Glenn Murray actually wants to go back to Bournemouth, and hopefully we'll snap him up on a permanent basis, whether we're in this division next season or the top division.
Well, that could actually happen this month.
Well, sure. But my point is, can you imagine Murray downing tools?
You can't
like that?
Just down tools. No, that's unacceptable.
Yeah. But Chris Martin wasn't on the pitch or even in the match day squad. So Johansson took the spot kick.
It wasn't that bad. I mean, it was probably better placed than Hemed's. Difference is Hemed's went in. So you know,
it's a lot better save than I thought it was. And I watched back on the replay because from behind the goal, it looked a pretty poor penalty actually.
Well, Stockdale has said that Ben Roberts had given him info on every single Fulham player on how they take penalties. So
how would he know?
That's his job.
Or does he just play FIFA 17 a lot?
Yes, probably exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But Fulham could and should have got him in the lead at half time.
Yeah. And I tell you what, just going back to that penalty as well, what's also very good about that is as the ball came back out, normally what you see is the striker follow in and Lewis Dunk rushed back to get that away. So huge plaudits to Lewis Dunk for the clearance as well as the save from
Stockdale. How far into the area do you suppose Lewis Dunk was?
But Stockdale was immense in this game, wasn't he?
He was, yeah, yeah. He was up for Player of the Month as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, went to the Barnsley fellow, yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I did actually tweet from the game was that I was particularly delighted about was that his decision-making was much better and he was actually catching the ball rather than punching it.
Well, I think that's where you've got the defences actually marshalling Matt Smith a lot better. I mean, there's a beanpole who, you know, is an aerial threat, you know, and Stockdale has to take that decision. The point is, as much as you say you prefer it when he catches and punches and what have you, I think that actually in every single instance, I suspect that probably he liked a catch in every single time. But when you've got players bundling in on the keeper and a catch is a risk, you go for the punch. I think what people are then concerned about is that punch going to be good enough. Mm. Stockdale's punching isn't that bad. It's fine. I mean, and at times he's got some real distance behind it. But I do understand the point is that there are times when you think, well, you could have caught that. But the fact is that I think what you're giving him credit for is actually catching under a certain amount of pressure and doing well with it.
Well, the thing is, when you're catching the ball, Matt, you're taking the pressure off the defence and also taking away the opportunity of the ball coming straight back.
That's it, yeah. And it was coming straight back at us because we couldn't seem to get over into our third of the pitch in that first half, certainly.
Okay. So what was it? I mean, as well as Fulham's, you know, very quick, very high-pressing play, was it, you know, sort of the fact that we were poor or the fact that they made us look poor?
We couldn't string passes together, and AD sort of already mentioned it a little bit. We normally have the outlets on the wing. Knockhart wasn't having his best game and Scalak was not an outlet. And I think that's why Bong suffered, because he looked up a few times. Now, if you've got Murphy or March in front of you, ping it over the top and let them run onto it. Mm. But there just wasn't that outlet. So we did spoon several out into touch.
It was like a rugby game.
The thing is that would have happened. If you're talking about miscued passes, that would have happened whether Murphy or March was up front anyway. Or you're just saying that Scalak wasn't making himself available?
Yeah, I think he wasn't an outlet because he only really takes the ball to feet and then doesn't beat his man, where he can play it over the top to the others.
He has got no pace at all, really.
I mean, actually, if anything, he's more of a wide midfielder than out and out winger. Because like I say, I mean, we've said it on this show before, he doesn't beat anyone. We know he can ping in a superb cross. Last year's assist winner, wasn't he? Ten assists.
But his best position is playing just behind the strikers. So I mean,
very possibly, yeah. I mean, it's a consideration. But as much as we say, Lualua is the fifth choice winger, we might have to sort of reconsider. Not that it matters too much, but we might have to reconsider whether you could actually ever call Scalak an out and out winger, just because he doesn't have the tricks that March, Murphy, Knockhart have.
Okay. Well, we got in a half time with a clean sheet somehow, and we started the second half. They obviously got a rocket, Matt, and they were much brighter.
They were, yeah, and actually, when Fulham scored, it was actually against the run of play because we did turn it on. Certainly,
it was a fantastic goal from Fulham, though.
Very good goal, and there wasn't that many complaints actually because they, you know, on the balance of play, they deserved to be ahead.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it was just the way. I mean, when you look at these goals, I mean, I looked at it several times again last night when I was like writing this, and
but that made you feel good.
Well, I was, you know, you're always looking, trying to find. Okay, was someone out of position there? Was who can you play? I'm just going to hold my hands up and say, what a brilliant goal!
The worst you could say is that I think that some of the defence was trying to push up a little bit because certainly Duffy was claiming offside, and Dunk was way back.
The ball through to Piazon from Kearney was just
but there was three Fulham players together. There was no Albion players there.
But so he hit it early and he used the defender to push the ball round, didn't he? So Stockdale was onside.
In that sense, it was perfectly slotted, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, we had to get back into the game and we tried to do that, and Norwood lofted a beautiful through ball to I think it was Baldock, and he tried to lob the keeper first time, but the keeper Button clawed it away.
That's a very good effort, actually. From Baldock there, because he had to hit it early, he had to hit it first time.
The lob or a chip? Norwood, though.
Yeah, fantastic.
A lob or a chip?
I'm going for a lob.
Yeah, I'll go lob. Yeah.
Okay.
Chips from the floor, lobs when it's already in the air.
Yeah.
Okay. Shortly after that, Knockhart was fouled on the edge of the box, but the ref Atwell plays advantage, and then Hemed is fouled in the box for an Albion penalty.
I think he was bundled over. I mean, let's put it this way, the player never went to, he never really challenged for it.
Well, it's not like Stuart Atwell to get decisions wrong, is it, let's be honest?
It was a soft one, I'd say. But the Fulham players didn't complain. They didn't argue, so...
Well, yes. I mean, it was. The thing is, it is one of those things where you think, well, if there was anywhere else on the pitch, they'd probably give it. So, you know, there shouldn't. I mean, for some refs there is, but there shouldn't be a higher degree of culpability within the penalty area in order to give a penalty. A foul is a foul, in the opinion of the referee, which is what the law states. Yeah, the fact it's soft, it doesn't matter. It's above the threshold of what the referee considers to be a foul, which is good enough for me.
But then there was an argument, man.
I wanted Hemed to take it because I've got more confidence in him than Murray. I assume that if Hemed is on the pitch, he's the number one penalty taker.
Seems to be the case now.
I mean, it wasn't...
What did you reckon? What did you make of it? And what was your preference?
My preference was Murray, but it was we're going to talk about this later. We're going to be talking about penalties a little bit later on, but Murray's a leading scorer. He's on fire at the moment. I would have gone with that, but I mean, the ball went in the back of the net.
Yep. Well, in that case, you know, Matt's considerations were well founded.
Very,
you know?
Very interesting technique, Emmett's got. Waits till the last millisecond to see which way.
Do you think that's the case, or do you think?
I think he does.
Because any penalty taker, and again, we'll talk about them. They always say, "Choose your spot, don't change your mind."
Okay. Well, we'll come back to that in a minute. Right. Okay. So, because we need to talk about what happened a minute later.
72 seconds, apparently. I was told.
72 seconds. Wow, fantastic!
It was dunk breaks up play and charges forward. He lays off to Knockaert, whose shot is saved, but Dunk is there to head in the rebound.
Well, there was actually about three of them following up.
Murray was there as well. But.
Well, actually, I've got a feeling. I'm glad it never went to Murray, because actually, I noticed as soon as the shot from Knockaert came in, Murray was actually offside.
He was offside, that's right, yeah.
So, but that's another point, isn't it? The shot comes in, keeper makes a save. And again, three Albion, like the Fulham penalty, three Albion players go charging in. Their defence stopped. In this instance, their attacks, in the penalty, the attack stopped. But yeah, it could have been any one of them. And. You know, let's face it. I know that you were talking about Knockaert's your player of 2016. I think just to be bloody contrary, actually, but it's Lewis Dunk.
Not like me.
It's not like me either. But you know, Lewis Dunk, for all the towering performances he has, it's good to see him cap a really good display and a really good season with a goal. And his celebration was, well, it actually terrified me, because you think, well, the way he went down and the way that everyone bundled on top of him, including, and this is what worried me the most, there's an eight player bundle, and the last one to go flying in on the top is Shane Duffy.
Oh, you wouldn't want that, would you?
Crash.
It was Bong on the top, wasn't it?
No, Duffy was the last one over the top. Yeah. I think Bong just hanged back a bit.
That was actually right in front of me. We were in row 6.
I could have sworn that Bong did the flying Nelson.
No, it was Duffy, and the Duffy's even bigger. So you think, you know,
it's a lump, isn't
it? It was a game of British Bulldog, wasn't it? Pin him to the floor.
Dunk looked brilliant as well, didn't he? So comfortable on the ball, charging through there.
I know a lot of people said it was Lawrence-esque
comparison, certainly. Yeah. Fantastic.
Well, the fact is, it was just a little perfect. You know, he did it for Bulldog up at Sheffield Wednesday. Just played the ball with the outside of his foot. He's got a range of passes, which then you get to realise, you get to stop and consider. Not that he should be, but you stop and consider, is there a midfield role for him? Because, you know, Lawrenson was here as a defender and then sort of played in midfield for a while. I'm not necessarily advocating that's what we should have, but, you know, if anything should happen to our current midfield, there is a consideration that, you know...
I think he would be comfortable there. I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah, well, let's face it, he wouldn't lose too much in midfield, would he?
Well, we've seen it happen before.
I think he'd have to do a lot more work.
Adam Allad played in midfield for a while, didn't he? Yeah, he was great there.
I think Dunk would have to do a lot more work. I mean, there's a lot more box-to-box stuff. But
okay, well, I gave the Raw Man of the Match after the game to Dunk. Would you agree?
I would definitely agree with that, yeah. He's come on leaps and bounds. And in that game, like I said, it was more than just his defending. He really picked the team up. And, you know, it showed how much it meant to him, the celebration. I'm not sure if you saw also at the end of the game, you know, he had a swagger on him coming over to the fans. He was loving that.
I bet they all did, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
And of course, he accidentally picked up a booking.
Yeah. That was fantastic.
Cantor and Aspinall were giggling about that. Yeah. He apparently took ages to take a throw in or something.
He just held onto the ball. We were talking about this on the way back, because we were saying, surely the referees know what he's up to. But even if they do, they still have to book him.
They still have to book him.
A clever one, shall we say.
Well, it's actually shades of, I mean, to a great degree of culpability, it's shades of Steve Foster. Remember, we got booked to that game a couple of games before the cup final and realised that actually a booking would actually suspend him for the cup final, but a sending off wouldn't. It was just the way that the discipline worked in those days. And he apparently, for anyone who was there, maybe they can confirm this, he was doing his best to get sent off. He was handballing deliberately. He was kicking Notts County players up in the air. He was doing all sorts of things, and the referee just refused to send him off.
That's crazy. Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online, radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm here with Matthew Wilkin and Alan Wares. And as usual, this show is brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. And I'm handing over this to young Matthew here. If you could describe this beauty for me.
All I would say is it's not as nice as the shirt of the year. The shirt of the year was a beauty, wasn't it?
Well, that
it's
one
on
was
our
from...
Facebook page.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, but this isn't.
Am I supposed to know something about this, am I?
Well, can you describe it?
I'll describe it. So it's a half-half shirt, red and white, and then red and white alternative sleeves as well. I'm not sure what label this is. What brand is this, Al?
I'm not sure, actually. This works well for it. It says Nay. I'm also looking at the there's a name on the back saying Bjegovic, wearing number 6. I'm going to guess it's something.
Well, I'm just looking at the badge. It looks Atletico.
Well,
is that right?
Well, actually, the badge is the badge. No. The writing on the badge is in Cyrillic. I'm going to guess this is Serbian.
That is a very, very, very good guess, Al.
Is it Serbian?
Oh, it is Serbian.
The fact is, A, the name on the back, and B, the fact that the writing is in Cyrillic rather than Roman.
It's fantastic. Well done.
He says, here you go then. This is the 1996-97 shirt or home shirt of FK Vojvodina.
Of who, sorry?
Vojvodina.
Okay. One more time.
Vojvodina. There's quite a lot in this bit. They're more familiarly as Vojsa, and it is also they are a Serbian professional football league club based in Novi Sad in Vojvodina, the second largest city in Serbia, Al. And they're one of the most popular clubs in the country. They play at the 20,000 capacity Kalafode Stadium, and it is named after Kalafode, who is the leader of the first Serbian uprising against the Ottoman occupation. Is that one for you? Is that one
That's
for you,
about 100 years ago, isn't it?
Okay.
There you go. In its long history, Vojvodina is one of the most successful clubs in the former Yugoslavia, winning 2 first league titles in 66 and 89 and were runners-up in 57, 62 and 75. And they also won the Intertoto Cup in 1976.
I didn't realize they had it back then.
Yeah, well, I didn't, but it was one they tried to bring back, wasn't it? But it was didn't really have much success.
Well, things we associate with the Intertoto Cup because Spurs and Wimbledon played their games at the Goldstone for that.
They are the third oldest club in the Serbian Superliga and the most successful football club in Serbia, next to the rivals Red Star Belgrade and Partizan Belgrade. Mm-hmm. Players who have passed through their doors include Miloš Krasnić, Gogo Kraka, Milan Stepanov, Dušan Tadić. He's currently at Liverpool, isn't he?
Don't know.
There's loads of them, all with an itch at the end of them. Yep. So there you go. Thanks for that, Phil. And
Ovich means son, by the way. You have it in Russian, although it's spelt differently. Ovich means son of.
There you go.
This much I know. Sorry, just getting back to Fulham then. Thanks for that, Phil. Nice one, mate. Before we move away from the Fulham bit, I've got to actually ask you too. I mean, it did look, there was a brilliant bit of footage that someone was, it was actually a non-Fulham, it was a neutral fan. He'd obviously got a press pass and he's taken footage from behind the Fulham goal, the opposite goal, of the entire away stand going disco mental when Dunk headed his goal in. Now you can see what happened there. I think the Fulham fans were actually sort of screaming and moaning. They actually realised, actually, in real life he's a wildlife photographer and he just fancied taking some footage of some real wildlife. So as much as we can see what happened there, describe what it was like for you two, especially when the ref blew the final whistle.
I think it's because the reason the reaction was like that is because we were still just settling down after equalising.
Yeah.
So your adrenaline's still high, you're still celebrating, talking about it, and before you'd even had time to think, there it is. And I saw the bit of footage as well. I don't know how many times you watched it, Al. I think I got
80,
up into it. Yeah, you know, I watched it so many times because it's just that natural reaction, isn't it? You know, just to see the crowd go like that.
Those are the wildest celebrations you have, are the ones that are actually a minute after the previous goal, aren't they?
Yeah.
AD? That and the final whistle celebrations.
Well, it was just great because, I mean, it really was do not pass go, do not collect £200, really. I mean,
thou shalt not pass.
We somehow got out of jail. It was, the second half performance was better. We didn't really produce that many chances apart from the two we scored, did we? We're top of the league and Newcastle.
I was about to say, combined with hearing that Newcastle lost at the same time, that must have
been. Well, we already knew that Newcastle were behind at that point. So, yeah.
Sod's Law says they were going to equalise. They didn't, but you know, Sod's Law said that they were going to.
But, you know, we're football fans now. So, I mean, we could be sitting 10 points clear.
We're eight points clear of third at the moment.
With
no games in
500
hand.
500 points, and and we'd still think we're going to get relegated.
We'd still be worried.
I think we're just about safe from relegation now, aren't we?
Okay, well, recently on our Facebook page and on our Twitter page, we asked you a question, which we do every now and then.
Just the once.
It's something that always delights myself and Alan, that that people listen to the show. Yeah. And we'd love to know where you actually listen. Now,
I think as I understand it, I think we're now into double figures for listenership.
Yeah. But I mean, there's this bloke called Matt Wilkin. Apparently, listens from Madrid.
Show off.
Yeah. I know. Apparently, you used to be in Kenya as well.
I think Kenya as well. Yeah, but it's a good listen in the gym, actually.
That's more than I wanted to know.
But just to give you an idea of the spread, a chap called Alistair Long. He listens every week from Austria. Nougar, he listens from Colorado. Emac is in Paris. That's all right. Judith Burke, who was we saw a couple of weeks ago, she listens from Brunei. Michael Ray listens in New Zealand. Martin Bowles from Sydney.
I think Steve Longley of the Seagulls Down Under does encourage it, but I think we do have a few listeners down in Australia and New Zealand. Yeah. So
there's a chap called Alan Pollard. He listens in North Carolina. Our former guest, Louis Miles, he's in Rio or Florence, depending on where his work takes him.
Now that is showing off.
And we also got, I don't know if you saw this come through, we also had a lovely message sent through from a chap called Peter Hodum, I think that's how you pronounce it. He listens in Tacoma. He's actually a season ticket holder.
Tacoma, is that Texas?
Tacoma is Washington State, I believe.
Oh, was it? Yes.
He's actually a season ticket holder at Seattle Sounders, so obviously there's a link there with
that
Beat
Washington
Awards.
Right, got you.
Now, he's never even been to Sussex. He's an American chap, and he's hoping to make it a pilgrimage.
I'm guessing the link here. Audie used to play for the Seattle Sounders, didn't they?
Yeah, but he's been following us for about 15 years. And,
oh, wow.
Listens to everybody. So thanks for that, Peter.
And we have our friends in the Netherlands as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thanks for all that. Keep those coming in. We love to hear them.
Absolutely.
And we're going to ask Matt. Now, obviously, you're an expat seagull, as it were. So how is it following Brighton from Madrid?
Brilliant and frustrating. the good side of things is we're on the TV a lot more now. So yes. I know it frustrates home fans because games get moved around to different times of the day. But for expats, you know, to be able to watch the majority of games online or even in the pubs is fantastic.
I was about to say, is it easy to find a bar in Madrid where they've got them? I mean, is it a usual sort of like O'Neill's disco wine bar?
There is a very big Irish bar. It might even be called O'Neill's, which has about seven different screens on. I can't think of the last game that I watched it. Man United were playing West Brom at the same time. So it was 200 fans face that way and just me looking at a little screen. I think that was a Leeds game, actually.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because I was about to say, I was just saying about Irish, there is actually one of the main thoroughfares in Madrid is the Cal O'Donnell, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Huge Irish population there as well.
I think a lot of people that went over and fought in the Spanish Civil War and they're kind of heroes for, well, pick a side. But yeah, so is there much of an awareness within from football fans? I mean, because once upon a time when we had Gus and we had then Oscar, obviously an ex-Barcelona player, I certainly have been over on holiday in Barcelona and people were asking about how Oscar's, when you realize, they say you're a Brighton fan, how's Oscar Garcia getting on? Is there any kind of residual stuff now that most of the Spanish contingent has gone, or are we sort of basically under the radar there?
It's one of those cities where people just like their football. So if there's a game on, people sit in the bar and watch it, whatever it may be.
Right.
And there's been certain times when Brighton are on TV, nothing else is on, you know, and people sit and watch it. So I think, you know, that will all change should we get to the Premier League, yeah, because, you know, everyone seems to know those teams. But as I said, the fact that we're on TV more and more and more is means we're getting that recognition.
Because I was going to ask, I mean, what sort of coverage, apart from when we're live on telly, what sort of coverage does the Championship get in Spain?
Nothing. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. You know, it is very much La Liga centric. They do like their Premier League football, but actually, you know, Real Madrid, Barcelona take precedent.
Okay, so rewind a year or so. I mean, I'll ask you the same question about Kenya. And I mean, how much coverage did the Championship get over there? Because, I mean, I know there was a massive, massive following for Premier League clubs there, wasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, football in Kenya is absolutely massive. And you actually have more football on there than you would in the UK, as fun as it sounds.
Really?
Because, well, they can show Saturday 3 o'clock games.
Right.
So they show
can
all
they
of
not
them.
Do that in Spain?
No, they don't. No, they're under some sort of restriction. So, you know, in Kenya, every single Premier League game would be on. Similar situation, if a Championship game was on and nothing else was on, people would sit there and watch it. But, you know, football is a way of life for a lot of the people there. You know, the Matatus, which are the minibuses which carry everyone, all of those are decorated, normally Chelsea or Arsenal or Man United, but, you know...
Did you give it a go?
Well, we gave out a lot of Brighton shirts. There's a lot of Kenyans out there with a Brighton shirt on.
Okay.
Somewhere out there.
So what I was actually going to say was that when it comes to, like I say, it's interesting, whether you're in Nairobi or whether you're in Madrid, so the fact is that the second division of English football, I mean, because where you're talking about Premier League, La Liga, Liga, you know, the Serie A, whatever it might be, these are the top divisions in these various countries. And yet here we are internationally selling the second division of English football. I mean, is that sort of strike a chord there, or is it just a bit of an anathema, or is it just a case of, like you say, a football game's on the telly and they'll just sit and plonk themselves in front of it?
I think, I mean, it's the same in UK. You get the difference between your sofa fans and your real fans. I like chatting to people who support your smaller local clubs. You know, in Madrid, for example, you have a third team called Lagunes, which play in blue and white stripes, 10,000 stadium there at La Liga, and Vallecano, which is they're sort of the San Paoli of Madrid, you know, very left-wing team. And speaking to those fans, they're a lot more knowledgeable and they will know about Brighton and they will know about your players. You've then got your people that just support Real Madrid. They're your armchair Man United equivalents, you know. So,
Do you flick V's at them? Like it's your obligation to do so for Man United fans?
As I said, despite the number of times I go and watch Real Madrid, I just cannot like them.
It's a strange concept, really, because I mean, we over here obviously we get to watch La Liga games and Serie A, Bundesliga, etc., but you don't really get to see La Segunda or Liga B or whatever.
Do you get to see that sort of thing in the host country as well?
That sort of stuff is on TV, but it's much, you know, on the lower channels. It's not a big event at all. I mean, like you said, it is interesting because the championship must be growing in recognition because they seem to be, well, certainly Sky seem to be showing more and more games all the time.
Well, they are us, basically, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the fact that Sky are showing more and more games is more to do with the fact that they lost half the Premier League games to BT. Yeah. So they have to fill the schedule somehow and make it worth their while, people coining, spending their massive amounts on Sky.
Well, they haven't come approaching us, have they? Good.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year, yeah.
But so how is your Spanish coming on?
Let's not talk about that.
Muy bene.
Now, one of the things that you have been involved with, of course, is the RIMPF charity, and you did some great work in Kenya. So tell us a bit more about that and how it's, an update on what you've done there, really.
Sure. I mean, the last time I was on, I talked about this, so apologies if I'm repeating myself somewhat. I went out to Kenya in 2013 to go and do some teaching, and one of the guys that lived in my block of flats was a Crystal Palace fan.
You tolerated him.
But he'd been out there a couple of years already and set up a charity called the Thunder Foundation. Thunder Foundation is a two-pronged charity. Firstly, it runs a school. It's a school for around 20 disaffected children from a range of different backgrounds. And then the other side of Thunder Foundation is running a football team. When I first went out there 3-4 years ago now, they just had two teams, which was a boys' team and a men's team. Thanks to the money that we got from RIMPF, who gave us a very, very generous £5,000, we managed to upgrade that. So we had 7 or 8 teams, I think, from under-9s all the way up to men's team, and also including a women's team as well. So that's gone from strength to strength. That means that they can now play at least one game a week, normally on a Sunday, at all different levels. So the money has been absolutely invaluable to it.
I was about to say, because, you know, £5,000 is going to go a lot further in Kenya than it would here.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, our initial idea with the money was we wanted to buy kit. We soon found that actually there was far more important things in the kit because they don't really care what they're playing in. As long as they can have, a game of football, they don't care. So, you know, we used the money to get the game on, the hiring of the pitch, the hiring of the officials, a minibus to get the players to and from the game. And also, I think I mentioned this previously, we learned that a lot of the players were not eating before or after the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I mean, some of the stories you were telling us before, that it was just terrible. I mean, the kids as young as 6, 7, 8 having alcohol and drug dependency.
That's right. And quite often, if the parents are affected by those issues, they use the children to go and get those things for them. So what you find in those sort of areas, particularly in Nairobi, is that everyone needs a name or a goal. Their life without football is just completely all over the place. There's no routine. What we've managed to do with the Renf money is say, well, you train 5 days a week, Monday to Friday, and then you have your game on Sunday. So all of a sudden, there's a focus of attention for these individuals, meaning that they're not going to turn to drink or drugs. You know, there is that focus, and to get their fitness up and to battle their way into the team and work their way up. So, you know, what to us is a relatively small amount of money has done absolute wonders out there.
Okay. And do you, I mean, obviously Madrid is a completely different kettle of fish, but I mean, is there, are you seeing similar problems in certain areas there? I mean, I know it's a completely different
kettle of fish. Well, it's a first world country, but I mean, do they have social issues that, you know, you've actually identified over there that possibly could
maybe
do with addressing?
Could help.
Possibly. I mean, I'm obviously nothing.
I mean,
on
are you
the scale
teaching
of,
over in Madrid as
I'm
well?
I'm teaching in Madrid at the moment. Yeah, nothing on the scale that we see in Kenya. I'd still like to keep my hand in what's happening in Kenya, even though I'm not there. I don't know if you can put the Thunder Foundation, you know, details on your your Facebook page.
Absolutely.
But we're always looking for anything that people can offer. And that is, you know, sending out your old shirts, your old football boots, or even if you just want to make a donation of any amount would be absolutely fantastic.
Okay. Now, it is coming up to,
it's rent fundraising season isn't it?
We're only in January and we're talking about rent season already. Now,
that's all right. Well, the thing
Before you tell us, you're organising the Rent quiz again this
year.
Now, we've always had a few fun and games with this one, haven't we? Because of with us being relatively successful. In fact, we seem to have got a lot more successful since Matt actually left the country.
I won it the year I left, actually.
Well, yeah, quite. And you won it on a penalty shootout.
Yeah, you're in my team.
Okay, but, what's happening
I'm
is...
I'm talking about the football club, not the quiz team.
That's true.
But you've selected the Friday before the Blackburn game, which is actually a young Seagulls day, so hopefully Sky won't get involved on that one.
Right, okay. Well, I didn't actually realise that. Well, the point is, I actually approached the club and offered two dates, and it's actually Sodexo who I'm supposed to deal with. It's just that I go through the club to deal with Sodexo, and the preferences from their point of view is March 31st, which is absolutely fine by me. It's exactly the same weekend as last year, so it is exactly a year on, so Peter Cannon can have his trophy for a year. I just hope he hasn't done something outrageous with it. But yes, Friday 31st of March, in the Heineken Lounge, 7:30, the Rent for Quiz night. All are welcome. Teams of up to six, £5 per person to enter. There'll be a raffle. There'll be, on your way in, there'll be free car parking at Bennett's Field. If, for whatever reason, and if you told me about did you say the Junior Seagulls Day?
It's a Young Seagulls
Day. Okay, Young Seagulls Day, and Sky are unlikely to mess, or less likely to mess around, then great. But in case they do, we do have a secondary date penciled in the night before of Thursday, the 30th of March. But obviously, it's going to be a case of watch this space. Additional to that, about 6 weeks later, we've got the annual challenge match, the 16th Robert Eaton Memorial Fund Challenge Match. We're back at the Dripping Pan this year. Brighton against Crystal Palace, naturally. Friday the 5th of May, 7:45 kickoff. No idea who the Albion have chosen as their ringers, bearing in mind that Palace's ringers last year, average age 36. Albion's ringers, average age 61. Hopefully they might actually... If anyone's got any suggestions as to who they'd like to see turn out in the stripes on the ploughed field of whether Bobby's hip is ready or not, I'd like to see Harty back there, because last time I saw Harty play there, he was playing for Havant and Waterlooville, and he was doing his best to get sent off.
We do just need to point out it's back at the Pan Zero this year,
isn't it? That's what I just said. It's back at the Dripping Pan this year. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, those are the two things. There are other Rent fundraising gigs coming up this year. There's some people who'll be running for Rent in the Brighton Marathon, and I think we'll have the Golf Day this year as well. More details as we get them, but those are the two dates for the quiz and for the football match this year.
Okay. I have been asked to point out that the club, Albion Community, are running their annual bike ride, which they're going
to Amsterdam
this year. And so if you want to get involved with that, plenty of the details will be all over the Albion Community website, the Albion website. But I mean, get involved in it. It's going to be an absolutely brilliant ride again.
Yeah.
They're trying to get me to do it, but I'm not sure. we'll see. But let's move it on. The January transfer window has opened, chaps, and it seems that there's been a... we're looking to have a bit of a clear out, would that be fair?
A little bit. I mean, Tony did say it's the fans' forum in Bristol. We're not going to offload anyone who we don't want to offload. I mean, this whole sort of skedaddle twaddle about Dale Stevens and all these sort of silly rumours that come up. I suspect Burnley realise they're actually been put in their place. They're not going to get Dale Stevens this month. He's made his public commitment. So there are. I mean, look at where we are. We're at the top of the table. There wouldn't be a championship club. There might be some of those who are on parachute payments that might be able to entice someone away with a fear of bigger payday. But let's face it, there is a damn good chance that whoever's at the club now is going to be playing Premier League football next year. So the enticements away are going to be limited unless someone higher up in the Premier League comes in for one of our players now. As for players going out, yeah, a little bit of a clear out. Like I say, Jack Harper, Elvis Manu. Elvis wasn't exactly a surprise. Jack Harper, I think, I've completely forgotten about. And who was the other one you mentioned?
JFC.
Well, the thing is, what he's done is he's hooked up again with Carl Robinson. He was with him at Milton Keynes Dons, a wee while back. And it's probably not such a major gear crunch for him. I mean, it's a relatively local club. I think he's good for what Charlton can offer. The fact they're actually, sadly, a club in big troubles at the moment. And I do wish their fans well with that. But I'd also say good luck to JFC. I mean, it's just a shame. He was a prospect. I remember him turning over Southampton quite handsomely and his screamer at Doncaster. But he just never quite made that step up.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. I mean, he was one of those players. He was the great white hope for one time. And, you know, he was the poster child for one club and one ambition.
Yeah, quite.
It's just a shame to see him. We all want him to be successful. I want every player who's worn the stripes to be successful, whatever they do. So,
yeah, apart from Murray when he left us, apart from that,
he never really pushed on, did he, from his early promise? And it's also, I think, for him, we never really knew where he was supposed to be playing. You know, when he first started, he was very attacking, minded midfielder, and he got quite a few goals in the same when he played for England.
But then Garcia turned him into this deep
line
midfielder.
That's right, and it didn't quite work for us or for anyone, really, let's be honest.
Well, he was very popular at MK. He had a good spell there. I mean,
I don't think he was particularly popular at Rotherham. I think he only played half a dozen games.
He only played six games there.
But I mean, I think he'll do well at Charlton personally. I think it's a good fit for him. I mean, it's not as though he's replacing Lookman,
but it is a fresh start for him.
It's a fresh start. I mean, you know, and he's working with someone who he's familiar with, so it's not such a major gear crunch for him.
Well, there you go. Well, obviously, Elvis Manu was obviously listening to the show when he found out that we had the Dutch seagulls on the show,
and
so much so that he's moved next door to Werner, and he sold that week's shirt of the week, which was the go ahead eagles, he has gone ahead and gone there.
Yes, I think, like I say, I don't think hardly anyone saw that coming. Oh, hang on a minute. Yes, they did. It just hasn't worked for him. You know, it's the whole thing of him forever being offside. It's going to be a standing joke. But he's going to be one of those players that we're going to look back on in 5 years. But yeah, I remember I saw him score. But I remember Elvis. Yeah, decent player. Couldn't play for Toffee.
He was very highly rated in Holland, wasn't he?
Well,
it does
show how far we've come that we signed a player for £1.5 million, which is that's how much we sold Bobby for.
Yeah.
Shows you how far, A, the club's come, that we can just basically throw away a player who's cost that amount of money.
Did we get anything back? Was he on loan or was he?
He's gone on loan, at his end of the contract. I'm guessing they paid some sort of loan fee, possibly.
Well, I don't know.
He was an enigma, be fair to say. I wanted him to be so successful.
I did, yeah.
And if only knew the offside rule.
No, and when we did see him play, when he was on the ball, he wasn't that bad. I mean, he would have probably fitted in quite handsomely to a Gus or even an Oscar side. But because we've actually, you know, the rest of the team has leapt on so much, he did look a little bit of a fish out of water. So, you know, it's indicative of what we are going to need going forward. You know, assuming we can actually maintain this promotion challenge and then move into the Premier League, which is a different beast entirely. The likes of Elvis, you know, they might have been attractive once upon a time, but we've got to look even higher from now on.
Agreed, yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on to that. We wish them all well. They probably won't be the last players to leave during this window, but
Does anyone have any sniff, a real one, as to, because I mean, just about everyone, almost everyone associated with the club, everyone, all the fans saying, right, we need another striker, and probably a Sam Baldock type striker rather than a Glenn Murray type striker. Does anyone have a sniff as to who we're going to get? And I'm not talking about rumours or, oh, this name sounds about right. Does anyone have any idea?
The club don't do business like that anymore, do they? No. It's very much undercover all the way.
I've got a feeling about what's the fella at Huddersfield?
Naki Wells.
And yeah. Sam Winnell as well is another one who's doing well at the moment.
Yep. I mean, as for the rumour floating around about Frank Lampard, I think someone asked Chris Hughton that and he went, what, senior or junior?
But yeah, it's a rumour mill. We'll
be grinding it.
We'll have a think about that a little bit later on. But first, we've just to finish off today, we have been asking you, who is the Albion's greatest all-time penalty taker?
And let's face it, most people can only probably go back a few years anyway, so...
Well, it's a subject that's open for discussion. Yeah, I mean, a few of our older listeners, I was going to say viewers then.
You didn't notice that camera behind you, did you?
I'll better put my clothes back on then.
A few
of our older listeners have actually said Brian Houghton.
I think that was the kind of obvious one. I mean, there was the famous one where I think Peter Wall took a penalty, missed it, but it got retaken, and Brian Houghton stepped in and took it. Mm. And let's face it, when Houghton said I'm taking the penalty, you didn't argue.
Spanish Dave, did he miss? He didn't. Well, miss
he
at all,
he
did
never
he?
Missed one for us. But I mean, there was. I mean, he's certainly one that people have mentioned a lot. Now we were talking about Thomas Hemed and his technique. Now in Thomas' career, he has taken 20 penalties and he's missed one.
Yeah. That powder puff one against Wolves.
We
call that powder puff if you want, but they're all like that. Now,
are they? You just think, how dumb are keepers?
But he never blasts it, does he? That's the thing.
Absolutely. But there was someone's done.
Has the Showers one come down yet? By the way,
but someone's written a piece on it's a WordPress piece which came out this week and about how many players can
do the
kids
eyes.
Do the eyes. Yeah. And out of all of the list here, Thomas is on top. And he's above people like, Mark Noble. He's a fantastic penalty taker. But, you know, you've got people like Messi and Dirk Kuyt and Javier Morales.
Thomas Hemed is officially better than Leo Messi.
Salomon
Kalou.
Don't know why he's on this list. But, but I mean, he's... You know, when they're having this argument the other day, I mean, Glenn Murray was successful with his last penalty, and now he's obviously the senior striker in this partnership at the moment.
I'd just be curious as to actually how, unless someone actually stepped in, or if Bruno stepped in and said, no, this is the way it is. Evidently, they hadn't had a conversation beforehand, because think, oh, what do we do now? They had a conversation. I mean, I think Thomas had the ball in the first place.
Yeah, and he won the penalty as well, didn't he? So.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bit playground. It's, well, I won the penalty, so I, and, you know, it's, you always give it to your best player, you know, the best penalty taker. And if that happens to be, in this instance, Thomas Hemed, then so be it. But somewhere down the line, to save any embarrassment of, you know, even the merest breakup of hashtag together, you make that decision before you get on the pitch, surely.
Mm-hmm. I mean, according to this here, it's someone's actually worked this out, so they really need to get out more. Thomas has sent the keeper the wrong way 0.867 times.
That's 86% of the time. Yeah,
yeah. That's pretty impressive.
That's what's embarrassing from the keeper's point of view, isn't it? But no, if you're talking about our best penalty takers, I seem to recall Bobby took a lot of penalties.
He missed a few.
I can only think of one actually.
Murray missed a few as well.
I remember one of Murray. Oh God, that season,
Wrexham,
everyone missed.
Yeah.
I remember Bobby missing one at Peterborough.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And then scored the winner.
Actually, and it's non-Brighton here, my all-time favourite penalty taker, and I'm not even going to say Matt Letizier here, even though he only missed one.
You're going to say Ray Kennedy?
No, I'm going to say Ray Stewart.
That's why. I knew it was Ray something.
Yeah, Ray Stewart of West Ham. He leathered it so hard that he took the net with him. That's the way you took a penalty. But yes, when people were talking about Watto as well, I don't recall Watto taking penalties.
I can't remember Watto taking penalties. He only took three kicks. But I mean, you mentioned Ryan Harley here, Al.
Yeah.
The weakest penalty of all time,
surely. No, I'll see that weakest penalty and raise you Christian Baz for weak penalties. The fact is, his went in.
That would be the Christian Baz as mentioned by Werner Schröer.
Yeah. Was it a Woking, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, in the FA Cup, yeah. But yeah. It was. I mean, we've had. I mean, over the years, I mean, did Gary Nelson take penalties? I can't remember.
I couldn't tell you. I would say probably at that time. Something tells me
Alan Kirbishley did.
Kirbishley would have done. Yeah. I think Chivers would have done as well. I could be wrong, but I don't know. I certainly don't recall it being Nelson anyway.
But, I mean, so in the glory days in the old First Division.
Oh crikey! Now you're making me think here. I don't think we ever. But, got I mean, well,
this is going to ramble on for a few weeks.
Somewhere down the line, there's going to be a stat out there, and I'm not going to actually look it up. But, you know, I probably will one day. I'm going to look at who's the chief penalty taker over the years. You know, whether there's. Thing is, Tim Carter's book might well say how many penalties we've scored, but it might not say how many penalties we missed. Mm. So there will be some Stato stuff out there, and I'm sure that everything's up to date and yada yada yada. But
It does appear to be true that we're getting more penalties towards the top of the table than you do near the.
Probably because you're attacking more.
You attack more. That's it. You attack more. It's the same that I've seen a few other clubs moaning that we always seem to have players sent off against us. It's like, because we're attacking more.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
It's just the laws of physics. If the ball's going to be in there, if the play's going to be in the in the penalty area, it's not so we're diving. Well. Much.
So Matt, this might be a stupid question.
Oh,
so
you're good at these. You're good at them.
So, what your favourite Albion penalty of all time?
Oh, God, that's a good question. Probably in the Swindon playoffs.
I was just about to say Matt Richards in the Manchester City shootout.
Yeah.
Who took the no? Because the
we scored all of them, didn't we?
Because
Virgo nearly put the ball in the railway line.
He smashed that one.
He got that beautifully. Because actually, the winning one or the last penalty was their one that they missed. Whereas the Man City one, the last penalty was one that we scored. And that was Matt Richards. So that was good fun.
Talking of penalties, we missed Leon Knight, of course. He scored quite a few, didn't he?
He did.
Playoff final, of course.
Playoff final.
And did he miss any?
That stuttering run-up. I think he did miss one. And then he didn't score again for us after that.
Right,
But I mean, you've also got another fantastic exponent of the art of the penalty kick in the term of Richard Carpenter.
Did he take that many?
He did take that a few, yeah.
I also remember, I think you were with us one time, there was the JPT, or whatever it was called in those days, shootout at Shrewsbury, which Grant
Holt
missed for Shrewsbury. And it was actually you and Shandy were really worried. J Robinson's going to take a penalty. Oh my God, and he just leathered it. He just smashed it. And you two were I wasn't expecting that.
And you're not expecting the end of the show, which it is. So thank you, of course, to Alan Wares, and thanks to Matthew Wilkie. Now you're returning back to Spain on Sunday.
On Sunday, yeah, back to Madrid.
Thanks for coming in, Wilco.
Thank you
very much. Are you going to be back to see us before the end of the season?
I'm going to try and get back as much as I can. Yeah, I've already booked in the last two games.
Yeah, don't worry about the playoffs, though.
No.
Okay.
Well, you know, EasyJet. It's only about 30 quid, isn't it?
Yeah, quite, exactly.
Pop back for the weekend. Yeah. Day trip. A lot of people do day trips to Premier League games.
Or so. As they say on the airlines, Wilco.
Stand there, baby. You shouldn't have done it. Did that good, you know? Better get a little mad.